the trees grew so dense that after a while they blotted out even the eerie light they were following. Seth stopped, knowing if you were out in the forest, it paid to take a moment to stop, to calm your own breath and the beating of your heart. Then you could start to hear things. He paused long enough to let his breath slow, to listen to the whisper of the forest. What was it trying to tell him? Dunster Dunstable, on his squat little legs, Professor Troutbean with her floaty dress and flappy manner, Gloria and the rest. They were all supposed to be out here searching for Tiffany. He could not imagine them wanting to hang around in a dank forest, as the darkness grew, especially as the ground got squelchy and boggy as they went further from the hotel and neared the river. So where was everyone? He could hear no searching, no calls. Everything was dark and eerily quiet. Faintly, in the distance, came another sound Seth recognized, the sound of rushing water carried in the night. He and Nightshade must have run far enough to reach the river. Had Tiffany been found? Had he somehow missed them, and they were all in fact back at the Last Chance Hotel, sitting in the squashy chairs in the lounge, drinking tea? But where was the firefly cage? Then the silence was broken with the piercing note of a terrified scream. Seth battled onwards, Nightshade by his side, his feet constantly snagging roots in the dark. He almost stumbled over Pewter and Angelique, who were crouched in the thick foliage. "What's happening?" Seth demanded. But when he looked ahead, they didn't need to tell him. He was looking at a scene that belonged in the middle of a nightmare. Here were the Professor, Miss Troutbean, Master Dunster Dunstable and Count Marid, along with Horatio and Norriban, and even Henri. They were cowering in a circle, clutching each other, looks of terror on anguished faces that were tinged green from a strange light, but it wasn't from the glowworms. They were surrounded by a collection of what Seth could only imagine had once been Henri's carved creatures, whittled figures of wood and vegetables. It was exactly like Angelique had described Mr. Bunn's magic, where he had made them come to life. Once they had grown to become monsters, gigantic creatures blind and heavy, with lumbering, clicking legs and sightless wooden eyes, their limbs flailing randomly in the darkness, forming a circle in which the small figures of guests and staff cowered in their shadows. One move from any trying to escape the circle would surely end in them being crushed. Pewter struck up a light in his palm, bright as a match. He nursed the ball of light, cupping his hands as it turned from light to a flame, as if he was assessing what to do with it. Seth whispered a warning. "If you start a fire, those things might burn. But chances are, everything else will go up like tinder. Those people might be trapped in a wall of flame. And what if it reaches the forest?" Pewter instantly shut off the fire. Seth looked at Pewter and Angelique's faces, which were both tinged with the same reflective green. "You're both magic. Can't you do something to bring those creatures down to normal size?"
"There's already way too much magic around," explained Angelique. "Adding any more is likely to produce something horribly explosive."
Seth turned and looked beyond the circle of petrified folk, beyond the wider circle of terrifying wooden monsters, into the darkness towards the roar of the river. There had to be a way to free them. He could just make out where the green light was coming from. Where was Kingfisher? He moved, crouching low, and started to run, skirting the dark trees in the direction of the waterfall, taking advantage of the darkness just beyond where the lights split, taking advantage of how well he knew this bit of the forest. But as he got closer, Seth had to put up his arm to shield his eyes. The light was getting brighter, so bright it hurt. But he could just make out a figure, a tiny figure, holding up an object that jetted piercing beams of white light.
The air was filled with an overpowering smell of burnt oranges mixed with a smell like smoke after a dying fire. Seth could see that his best chance, maybe his only chance, was to approach from behind, take the figure by surprise. And then they turned, and he could see clearly who it was. They were holding a small cage, which had a beautiful golden light spilling from between its bars. The figure holding it aloft was Tiffany. Her triumphant white face was gleaming in the mesmerizing light that was cascading from the object she was holding. Seth inched closer. It was clear Tiffany was using the cage to control those monstrous wooden figures. Seth could see that even her parents and Henri were looking on in dread as Tiffany kept up the circle of lumbering tree-like objects, stumbling blindly like zombies, controlled by the beam of light that was being generated by the cage she held above her head. He moved close enough to spring, knowing he could take her down. Then, out of nowhere, a fist smashed into the side of his face and sent him reeling. He saw stars, but managed not to fall.
"Seth, been wanting to do that since we first met."
Chapter 48, And I'm Going to Get Away with It.
"If it isn't my favorite chief suspect, I should have just left you under lock and key. Too soft, that's my trouble."
Seth gritted his teeth and tried not to show how much Kingfisher's punch had hurt him. He knew without a doubt that Kingfisher had killed Dr. Tholomyès, but now wasn't the time to deal with his anger about that. He needed to find a way to save everyone from Tiffany. "We need to stop," but he got no further. He felt something grabbing at his legs, holding him. The way Kingfisher stood just a couple of feet away made Seth sure he was being held fast by magic. Kingfisher moved relentlessly closer and seized him in a swift move. He turned Seth around, twisting his arm upwards so that Seth cried out.
"Thought it would be so easy to get you to take the blame. I should have been out of here yesterday with you in handcuffs. A job well done. Congratulations all round. You really have been a pain, Seth. Time I caused you some."
Seth tried to twist away, but Kingfisher held him too firmly. If he didn't stop hauling Seth's arm like that, he was going to black out any second.
"You killed Dr. Tholomyès," said Seth, gritting his teeth.
"And I'm going to get away with it. You can't stop me. I've always been a step ahead."
"A step ahead? Then why involve Tiffany? You had to because you were too useless to put the blame on me all by yourself. You failed."
Seth tried to wind around, but Kingfisher only twisted his arm further upwards at an angle that made Seth fear it would break. He felt the pain, and sweat broke out, his vision blurring for a second, but focused on one thing. Kingfisher had killed Dr. Tholomyès. He absolutely could not get away with it. Seth had to find a way.
"That's your trouble, Seppi," Kingfisher hissed in his ear. "Always getting in the way. It's because of you I've had to scheme and backtrack, and I had to involve her."
He lifted his arm to jab an accusing finger and looked at Tiffany. He was distracted enough just for a second, just a moment, but it was long enough for Seth to seize his chance to bring his booted foot down on Kingfisher's ankle, causing him to howl. Seth had never deliberately caused anyone any pain before, ever in his life. But he thought of Dr. Tholomyès and made a fist with his free hand. He knew he had to make this punch a good one. He had one chance. He sent it slamming into Kingfisher's face.
"That's for locking me up in that cupboard," he said.
He managed to bring up his elbow after the punch and caught the soft part of Kingfisher's chin.
"And that's for Dr. Tholomyès."
He left Kingfisher sprawled on the floor, and was free to go after his next target. He sprinted. He knew he'd have only seconds, but he might still have the element of surprise on his side. He raced towards Tiffany, and would have made it if Kingfisher hadn't recovered enough to yell a warning just as Seth's spring brought him out of the shadows. Tiffany turned and caught him at the last second, her face turning from smiling evil triumph to surprise and then shock. Then the smile returned, an evil leer as she saw it was Seth. Seth just ploughed right on. He didn't go for the cage, but using both hands, crashed straight into Tiffany's middle, sending her staggering backwards, the look of surprise perfect on her flawless face. She clung on, and Seth moved closer, hooking one of his feet around her right leg so that she stumbled backwards and crashed heavily, face first, to the floor. She dropped the firefly cage. The instant she let go, Seth spun to look and saw all the wooden figures rolling on the ground, all the shafts of white light simply stopped, as if someone had pulled a switch. The giant wooden figures stopped moving, and were shrinking back to normal size, making their last sways of distorted movement like snowmen melting. Tiffany was on the floor, and crawling towards Seth, but he saw her, and kicked out and ran to grab the firefly cage. But now all chance to see was fading without the magical light. He could see nothing, except vague shadows cast by the moon and stars and the green glimmer of the nearby glowworm glade. Something launched itself at Seth from Sidon, lunging with full force, and it was his turn to crash to the ground, crunching his shoulder into the soft mulch beneath his feet. He reached his hand forwards, stretching in the almost blackness, knowing Kingfisher was there, but neither could see in the dark, and they scrabbled blindly in the dirt, because the firefly cage was there too. Then his fingers found it, and he snatched it up, and Kingfisher let out a roar of rage as he realized Seth had beaten him to it. He gave a second leap towards Seth, putting his hands around his throat. Seth tried to fight him off, looking into his crazed eyes, starting to choke, the pressure on his neck making the world blur. It was several long seconds before Seth remembered he had something to hit him with, and whacked him over the head with the cage. Kingfisher released his grip, and went sprawling, and Seth took in gulps of cold air, hoping everyone else was getting away and heading for safety. Seth, bent double, his arm still aching from Kingfisher's twisting, his throat feeling like he'd swallowed sandpaper, breathed and in the darkness saw the flash of a shadow that had to be Tiffany running away. She was going towards the waterfall, but the river was no means of escape. The rapids here were raging. The air was already filled with their warning roar, but Seth had no choice but to scramble after her. A weak moon had emerged from the clouds, but it hardly mattered, as he was nearly blinded by the spray. She was heading up alongside the waterfall itself. Tiffany began to climb, and Seth followed, one hand clutching the firefly cage. The rocks became more slippery as they got higher. He was grabbed from behind, and as he tried to find the last remnants of strength to struggle, he felt the sharp point of a blade at his throat.
"This is as far as you go, Seppi," said Kingfisher, right in his ear. "Hand it over."
He had to yell above the roar of the angry water. As Kingfisher used the blade to prod him closer to the edge, all Seth could do was inch backwards, still clinging onto the firefly cage, to the very edge of a rock that jutted right out over the raging flow. His eyes swiveled to see the fierce swill of the water rushing from the waterfall. Kingfisher and Tiffany had surprised him by heading for the waterfall. Seth wondered what their plan could possibly be. Help would be too far away, even if anyone could see in the dark that they'd headed this way. The knife glinted silver in Kingfisher's hand. Seth had no option. He was going to hand over the Firefly cage. Unless he let himself fall into that unforgiving water, he could do it. And he could take the device with him. And it would be the end of both him and Firefly Cage. It was his only way out. Over Kingfisher's shoulder, Seth could see that Tiffany's progress was getting slower as she stumbled over the rocky ground. But Seth caught a glimpse of something that surprised him. Closing in on her was someone who had come to find them in the darkness, rather than heading for the hotel, the bulky, scarred figure of Count Marid. Then a spark of blue zapped Kingfisher's chest, and he dropped the knife as if it had become lightning. Seth turned and saw Angelique, her face set determinedly. Kingfisher was quick, and grabbed, not at Seth, but at the cage. Now they both had hold of it, neither willing to let go, grappling and slipping on the treacherous rock. Seth felt himself lose his footing and teeter back so that the rush of water was like thunder in his ears. Still, he clung on. Angelique stepped in, and her cane swept low to the ground, swiping at Kingfisher's legs. Kingfisher's grip on the cage loosened, but was the only thing stopping Seth falling into the water, and he felt himself tip backwards. A hand grabbed him. A firm grip pulled him slowly away from the edge to safety, and Seth found himself looking into the dark eyes of Angelique Square. They both turned in time to see Kingfisher already leaping away, clutching the Firefly cage like a trophy. The water was too loud for it to be heard, but Seth mouthed, "Thanks." He didn't know why Kingfisher headed for the waterfall, but Seth could see Tiffany now, scrambling just a few feet ahead of Marid, heading in exactly the same direction. Seth struggled on, fighting exhaustion. Climbing was slow and painful as he closed the gap on Kingfisher, with Tiffany just ahead and Marid, and now Angelique closing in. They were all scrabbling upwards slowly, the water soaking all of them and making it almost impossible to see. When Kingfisher was only an arm's length ahead of him, Seth wearily launched himself. Kingfisher kicked out and started to scramble backwards across rocks, still heading higher towards the very top of the waterfall, where the water cascaded out of the hillside. But Kingfisher held on to the Firefly cage. Seth felt the full force of Tiffany careering into him from the side, knocking the breath out of him. She tried to give Seth a kick, but he reached out and grabbed her leg, jerking her off her feet. She satisfyingly face-planted into soft earth, but only turned to flash those perfect white teeth at Seth in a grin that told him he'd failed to hurt her. He found it much easier than he thought it would be to punch her, because he had imagined himself doing it so very often. Tiffany screamed as Seth's punch connected with her nose, enough to send out a trickle of red blood.
"Look what you did to my nose, Seppy," said Tiffany,
her eyes filling with tears. Seth left her nursing her bloodied nose and went for Kingfisher, scrabbling up the slippery rocks, his fist stinging. Soaking wet, stained with Tiffany's blood and barely able to speak from where Kingfisher had choked him, Seth breathed heavily, still believing he could stop him and get back the Firefly cage. Then Kingfisher waved something aloft, and Seth could see what it was. The Black Book. Kingfisher lifted it and dangled it above the torrent of water, threatening to drop it. Seth could do it. He could reach Kingfisher. Kingfisher laughed, and Seth saw his precious book curl in an arc, thrown from Kingfisher's grasp and heading straight for the pitiless river. Without thinking, Seth took his eye off Kingfisher, dived forward and caught his book, only just in the tips of his fingers, saving it from being lost forever in the river. And when he looked around, Tiffany, still clutching her nose, was reaching towards Kingfisher. Kingfisher went to take her hand, but she wasn't reaching for him. She totally surprised him by grabbing instead at the firefly cage and shoved him aside, knocking him off balance. He was too shocked to stop her, and just to make sure, Tiffany sent the firefly cage slamming into the side of Kingfisher's head. They were high now, almost at the top of the crashing waterfall, but there was something about the large, flat stone on the very edge of the roaring waterfall where Tiffany had stopped, something about the way it shimmered, as if the rock itself was moving into the distance that told Seth something was wrong, and that it was already too late. Tiffany reached forward, the fingers of one hand stretching out, the other closed tightly around the firefly cage, and she touched the large, flat stone. And then she wasn't there. She had completely vanished. Chapter 49, The Last Hope. Seth looked at the blank rock where Tiffany had literally disappeared before his eyes.
"Well," said a voice,
and Inspector Pewter appeared at his elbow, nodding at the empty rock, water dripping off his hair and off the end of his nose.
"That'll mean an awful lot of paperwork on Monday."
Kingfisher, also drenched, hair plastered to his face, his moustache sagging, let out a cry of rage.
"She escaped in the teleport I set up, and she took the firefly cage with her. We must get after her. We've got to stop her. We—"
"You, young man, are going nowhere," growled Pewter.
"I'm arresting you in the name of Magicon."
Pewter took from a pocket what looked like a piece of thin, green twine, and Seth hoped he had something more substantial than something you used to tie up tomatoes if he was going to secure Kingfisher.
"No!"
The rest of Kingfisher's rage was lost in the torrent of the waterfall. He took one look at the twine and backed away, sending out a vicious kick at Pewter, who dodged nimbly. Seth didn't even see how he got Kingfisher's hands behind his back. But as soon as his hands were tied, Kingfisher stopped yelling and struggling and went completely silent. In fact, he stopped moving. He seemed to float like a balloon.
"Magical arrest," Pewter explained to Seth.
They were the last words Seth remembered as his head started swimming. He felt all the pain where he had been punched, and hit about the head, and the tiredness from chasing through the forest, and the climb to the top of the waterfall. He felt the weakness take over his legs, which buckled beneath him, and he fell, in a crumpled heap of exhaustion, at Pewter's feet. Someone had tucked Seth into bed. His first thought was to lie there for as long as possible, to snuggle back into the pillow, forever, if at all possible. Nightshade was curled up on the end of the bed, and he moved his legs slowly so as not to disturb her. He lifted a hand with difficulty, and tentatively put it to his head, which felt as if it had swelled to the size of a watermelon. It throbbed with pain, as if someone was attacking the watermelon with a hammer. He needed to know what was going on, even more than he needed to sleep. So he struggled downstairs, following the sound of voices into the kitchen. His hand felt for his black book, where he liked to keep it tucked inside his shirt. But someone had taken it from him. Seth moved his aching limbs painfully towards the kitchen and heard Count Marid sobbing.
"Why? Why did he have to kill him?"
"I doubt Kingfisher was smart enough for it to have been his plan."
There was the sound of Pewter quietly stirring tea.
"Following orders is my guess."
"Red Valerian, orders to get hold of the firefly cage and eliminate Dr. Thelumius in the process."
Seth finally reached the kitchen, which contained only Pewter, Count Marid, and Angelique. Pewter was nodding.
"It started to go wrong when he couldn't quite put the blame on Seth. He was operating out of his depth. Then Tiffany got the sniff of something she'd like to be involved in, and even she managed to outsmart Kingfisher.
Tiffany always had plenty of brains. She just never found anything worth using them for before, said Seth, speaking out and noticing the kitchen was tidy and smelt of boiled eggs and toast. As they all wished him a good morning, Seth glanced at the cracked kitchen clock, amazed that he'd been asleep for hours. He couldn't believe it was actually morning. He guessed the other guests had probably gone, and that Mr. and Mrs. Barn and Henri were either still sleeping or just keeping well out of the way. Was it really over? Was he really no longer under suspicion? He thought how he'd felt when Tiffany had been to his room and brought out his black book and the gold coin, and he'd been forced to reveal the bottle of poison. At that point, he had really felt it was all over for him, that the case against him was cemented and he no longer even stood a chance of clearing his name. Pewter pushed a cup of strong tea towards Seth.
"Hope you slept well. We spent the last 2 years after Red Valerian and had not a single lead, just a lot of very unpleasant and suspicious deaths," Pewter went on, turning back to Marid. "I've dispatched Mr. Kingfisher to some people who will be delighted with anything he has to tell us."
Seth hoped Kingfisher ended up spending a very long time in the same dark cell as Seth had imagined himself in.
"Kingfisher had a rune glass, exactly like mine," explained Seth, his throat raw from where Kingfisher had attacked him.
"That's how he got into the dining room with the poison, and put the blame on me. He came prepared." He hadn't had the chance to mention he discovered Red Valerian's calling card in Kingfisher's room, and walked stiffly over to Pewter to wearily hand him the card he'd found and taken from Kingfisher's room. "I guess this proves he was working for Red Valerian."
"At least we have our murderer, Baldo, even if the Firefly cage may take a little longer," said Pewter.
"I still don't understand how Kingfisher almost got away with it," said Count Marid, shaking his head. "Putting the poison in the dessert like that made it so confusing, so difficult to pin on him. Slippery fellow."
"Until we get a chance to get the whole truth out of Kingfisher, all I can do is offer you my guesses, even though I'm sure they are very poor ones," said Pewter. "But for what it's worth, remember, he had the run of the hotel with that rune glass and plenty of opportunity for murder. Torpor was really at his mercy." Pewter sipped his tea thoughtfully. "I imagine him scouting around for a good opportunity, one that he might get away with, and squarely put the blame on someone else. He had arrived armed with poison, we know. He may have planned to do nothing more clever than sneak in on Torpor when he was alone in his bedroom. We may never know. But I can only imagine he must have seen that dessert going into the dining room, all marked up as to only be eaten by Dr. Thelomius. Well, what would you do? It was an opportunity too good to miss, and a brilliant way to make sure he looked innocent of the crime."
Seth slumped back onto one of the chairs next to Angelique, who had a black coffee in front of her, and was quietly examining the silver top of her red cane.
"The moment Tiffany learned that all the folks staying in the hotel were magical, she would have been desperate to take every chance she got to grab any magic for herself," said Seth. "Kingfisher couldn't have known that Tiffany was exactly the sort to completely turn the tables on him the very first moment she got. When Tiffany knew that there was a chance to steal an immensely powerful magical device all for herself, she would have seized it, and she quickly did something with it that was terrifying and horrible," he muttered.
Pewter laid a firm hand on Seth's shoulder.
"The prospect of magic has a very damaging effect on some people."
"Will she now have magic, the power of that thing?" asked Count Marid.
Seth remembered the lumbering, eyeless creatures, and knew that wasn't simply bad magic, that was truly terrifying magic.
"'We'll have caught up with her before she knows how to control it,' reassured Pewter, checking his ornate wristwatch. "'I'd say that there's a 50-50 chance that she'll simply be burnt to a crisp if she tries to use it.'
"'And what's the other 50, Pewter?'
"'That she'll end up the most powerful girl in the universe.'
Chapter 50 The Prospect of Magic. Angelique was looking deep into the end of her cane as it glowed blue. Then she snapped the top shut and tapped a shoe against it, giving Pewter a tiny nod. Pewter turned to the Count.
"'We might be on Tiffany's trail quicker than you think. We might have our best lead yet. We should get on to it.'
Did this mean Angelique had managed to take some sort of reading that would give her a clue as to where Tiffany had teleported to? Seth guessed so, but he knew too little about magic to try to understand. Plus, he was just too tired.
"'Well, that teleport won't stay open forever,' said Count Marid. "'I should get going,' he said his farewells.
"'Am I allowed to know what's going to happen to my book?' asked Seth.
It always seemed to become warm in his hand and belong there. He felt having a connection to a book that presumably had been written by a sinister sorcerer was not a smart thing to admit to, but he suddenly could not bear to think that he'd never see that book again. Pewter turned from where he was refilling the kettle, and his face crinkled into a smile, his eyes shining bright blue behind his glasses. From his pocket, he retrieved the black book and pushed it towards Seth. Seth reached for it. It was probably the sort of magical artifact Angelique would insist on removing. He quickly tucked it snugly inside his shirt, next to his skin. It glowed. He looked up to see Angelique standing over him.
"'I still don't think you understand,' she said.
"'I do.' You are an undercover magical secret agent investigating those missing Fid Exploded. Your job is to discover who actually died in the Unpleasant and who is in hiding. I even know how you do it. You go into buildings with a known magical history, and if there are only traces of old magic, you do things like take away all magical artifacts, and it's called cleaning. See, I know everything. I know that's what brought you here. You were on the trail of Witchracht, an MFE, to see if he is alive or dead. Although I still can't believe this Witchracht, this sinister sorcerer, used to live here at the Last Chance Hotel, and had Dr. Thelomius's firefly cage. It must have been here years. Witchracht was a scientific sorcerer, and probably conducted all sorts of sinister scientific magic and experiments here. The book is probably his, but if I'm allowed to, I'm going to keep it, he finished. Neither Angelique nor Pewter said anything, and Seth tried to work out what they weren't telling him.
The magical history of this place. You're not... You don't mean Mr. Bunn is from a magical family?
He asked in horror, as more pieces fell together, and he really didn't like the picture he was seeing.
This house?
He just found a way to use the firefly cage, right? He was struck by an even more terrifying thought.
Tiffany, she isn't going to inherit magic.
You are right that this house is in dire need of proper cleaning, sniffed Angelique.
Goodness knows what a proper clean will find.
Magic still in the walls, definitely in the garden. But don't worry, the Buns aren't a magical family. Seth breathed an audible sigh of relief.
Pewter gave out a bark of a laugh. Guess you've had enough excitement.
He moved closer to Seth.
I can see it's nice here, this spooky wood, the glowworms, the rabbits. What do you know of your heritage, Seth? What did the Buns tell you about your parents?
Well, my father worked for them as a chef and...
Seth, you said a moment ago that Witchracht...
Look, you've worked out that Witchracht is a she, not a he, said Angelique.
You do realize that Witchrakt is quite possibly your mother. Seth blinked several times. His mind refused to take in what she was saying. He felt like he might pass out all over again. But Witchrakt, a sinister MFE, can't be my mother.
It needs proper investigating, said Angelique. But yes, probably. That meant Angelique had travelled here to investigate if his mother was alive or dead. It seemed incredible. Too much to take in. Seth delved deep inside his mind for a single memory of his mother. His father had always become silent, or so upset if Seth ever tried to talk about her. He'd stopped a long time ago. Had she really been a sinister sorcerer, and left him a mysterious book that mentioned magical things? What had his father known? And if his father hadn't ever breathed a word to him about any of that, then what else might there be to learn? What other secrets had his father and his mother been keeping? His mind ran on. If his mother's official status was missing if he'd exploded, that meant no one was completely sure. Was his mother even really dead? Pewter chuckled.
And I'm pretty sure the Buns never owned this place. It was your mother's ancestral home. They just took advantage. Took it over after your father disappeared, I imagine. You were too young to know what was going on. The Buns would have got away with it, too, if it hadn't been for Miss Square and her department checking on these things.
Pewter checked his huge watch.
Okay, duty calls, he rose.
Seth could only stare from one to the other of them. The hotel is mine? He waved around him, looking towards Angelique for confirmation, and she was nodding.
I don't know if you've ever considered the possibility of trying a little magic, Seth, she said, giving a little cough.
Now this was definitely too much, and he could do no more than wordlessly shake his head and feel that his jaw had gone quite slack.
It's just that there is a possibility, you know, that you could find some sort of spell you could do, even a small one.
Just a spark of magic is all you need, you know that. You might try your luck applying for the prospect, and officially join the magical world.
A huge part of Seth wanted it to be true, that it might really be a possibility.
I've never done any magic. I'd just be exposed as another of the crackpots out to defraud the magical community, he whispered. Wouldn't I know if I was magic? Inspector Pewter told me that learning magic was one of the most difficult and dangerous skills you could ever undertake. I couldn't even begin.
But not for everyone, Seth, interrupted Angelique. Magic is much more complicated than that.
Magic.
Oh, it's difficult to explain. Magic tends to come differently to different people, and sometimes not at all, even if you really, really want it. I was lucky. I come from a magical family, and my inherited magic is really strong. Until you are actually brave enough to try, you won't know if you've inherited any actual magic. It might be really strong like mine, but you'll have to work at it.
Or you might be like Miss Troutbean, and have inherited none at all, put in Pewter, turning from where he had reached the door.
Seth thought of the sacrifice Dr. Thelomius had made, fighting to make sure the magical world stayed strong, for new recruits to be welcomed and nurtured, and for sorcerers to use magic for good. Dr. Thelomius had truly believed that anyone could learn, and that all you needed was a spark of magic, that and then access to the secret Elysee library of magical texts, to train up your magic. If Angelique thought he had a chance to be admitted to the magical community, he would do it. He'd find a way. He'd find a way to be magic. Only one thing made him shrink from the idea. If they were right about his mother, and that affinity he had with her black book, did that mean he was destined to do only dark magic? he made a vow. If he found he did have any magic at all, he'd make sure he never used the sort of magic that led to people dying. He followed Pewter and Angelique out to the front of the hotel. He'd thought it was going to be difficult to say goodbye, but now he had a mission. He was going to experiment on something even more exciting than recipes. He was going to try to do magic.
"Don't forget, Mr. Bunn has some good basic beginner's magical textbooks, Seth," advised Angelique. "Give it a try. You might be one of the lucky ones and find it's easier than you think."
She hesitated. "Only don't use that black book, will you, Seth? I expect there are a lot of spells in there, but the difficulty for a beginner is knowing which are the good ones." She nodded. "Goodbye, Seth." Pewter and Angelique were stepping into a shimmering shaft of light that must be their teleport away from the Last Chance Hotel.
"If you promise me you'll try some magic, I promise I'll come back in a couple of weeks and see how you're doing," shouted Pewter.
"I will," cried Seth. "Would a couple of weeks be enough?"
Everyone kept telling him how hard magic was, but then it came differently to different people. It was difficult to take it in properly, that his mother might have been magic, almost impossible to think he might have inherited her skills. More than ever, he longed for his parents to be here. Where should he even begin? To even attempt to be like his mother and do magic? He reached out his fingers and twiddled them, as if even knowing there was a chance would make them sparkle with magic like Angelique's cane. Seth's heart felt easier knowing he would see Pewter again, and the whole of him felt thrilled at knowing the world truly had magic in it, and there was a possibility it might even apply to him. In fact, he itched to go and try it right away, as he watched and waved as Pewter and Angelique disappeared. You've been listening to The Last Chance Hotel by Nicky Thornton, narrated by Russell Bentley, published by Nudged Audiobooks, an imprint of W.F. Howes Limited. This work is copyrighted. 2018 Nicky Thornton. This recording is copyrighted. 2018 W.F. Howes Limited.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.